Hello and welcome to PhD Perspectives, a Midlands Graduate School podcast series. I'm your host, Aishwarya Vishwamitra. As a PhD student in the program, I'm well aware of the multiple forms of support a student can receive. And today we're going to learn a little bit more about placements from our placement manager, Chris Thompson.
Hi, Chris.
Aishwarya, thank you for having me. It's great to be here. How are you doing?
I am great. This is episode 2 of the MGS podcast series. The last episode, we went into conferences, something that a lot of MGS students make the most of because of the RTSG fund. But with placements, there's a whole other pot that people can look into if they want different kinds of opportunities. Before we go into the questions of what is a placement, how do we do a placement, what does a placement look like, I just want to dive straight into your favorite story. Or one of your favorite stories. I know it's hard for someone to choose their favorite from all the students that have been through this program. But do you have a favorite experience of something a student has done with a placement that you've helped organize?
It's a good question. I think there's a recency bias because this came out yesterday, so it's fresh in my mind, which will help the answer hopefully. But yeah, we had someone recently do a policy placement, so they went away for 3 months, had that time off their PhD. Solely focusing on different projects, reports, lots of different admin duties, and just seeing the change as they come to the end of their PhD, applying for a job. And whenever I go through someone's application for a job after the PhD, we say, right, let's look at the essential desirable criteria. Let's go line by line, look at the advert. What have you done? What haven't you done? And the change pre to post placement, the confidence in this individual saying, oh, wait, essential criteria 2. Yeah, I did that on placement. Essential 4. Did that on placement, et cetera, et cetera. And there were so many boxes ticked off. And I think just that confidence, that hope, that, you know, vision for the future that everything will work out just fine. Because I think we all have our doubts during our PhDs, I've myself included, to remind that it won't quite work out. To see his confidence go up in just 3 months of doing a placement, that would be a really perfectly fitted example of what a placement can do for your future employability.
Now, that's something you don't hear often from academics. Usually, academics is seen as a whole different universe from anything to do with the real life job market. And as you said, that leaves a lot of students floundering at the end of a master's, at the end of a PhD, not feeling like they have any real experience to get a job. But a placement is kind of a bridge. I think that's how I've been looking at it. Now, we get into the admin kind of questions. What is a placement? How long does it last, and how does someone make it happen?
Yes, you've got 3 different options. I'll be as quick as I can explaining them. You've got the overseas institutional visit. So this is a chance for up to 13 weeks to go to another research institution, even university for that time. That's a chance to network, get involved in projects, even a chance to publish maybe, a little bit of teaching, really just living that academic life in a different country. So that's one option. You've got a non-academic placement. So a chance to work in industry, a different sector outside of academia, that can be within the UK, that can be abroad. And then you've got the UK institutional visit, used to be called an academic placement, but we've changed the name recently. So basically the overseas institutional visit, but in the UK, same premise. You go to a university or research institution here in the UK. And
That's a really powerful tool or kind of interaction to have in any role, right? To have, I guess you would call it a mentor in some capacities, but also as someone who is in your corner, willing to go through all of those documents, your CV, your cover letter, keep an eye out on the world and see what opportunities are coming through. I'm about a little over 1.5 years into my PhD, and our interaction started way back when. We've had so many different calls. You already know the complete profile of everything I've done so far, what I'm interested in, but that's because these interactions are allowed, right? It's the fact that you exist, that you know so much about my whole portfolio. You are basically the AI software that's learned everything about me now. And so if you see a role out there, I am confident that, you know, Chris knows what I'm interested in. And it's such an amazing interaction to have. And I'm using the word interaction because we've talked about this before. PhD life, academic life can be isolating, it can be lonely, it can also be collaborative and networking. You've said that there's so many different adjectives that can create the PhD experience. But at the same time, going and finding all of that is quite tiring. Networking is exhausting. So for you to be a part of the MGS and be available in this way, we're really lucky to have that. Now, has there been a role that you've come across in your scoping that you're always doing, and you thought to yourself, I would have loved to do that when I was a PhD student?
For me, it was always the prestige. It was always my background is sports science. So I was an undergraduate, as a master's student, and PhD. It was always going for the best. If that sounds disrespectful, but it's aiming high, and I think that's maybe something I would really highlight to the listener: aim as high as you can, And if you're getting rejected by the top one, top two in the world, no problem. There's no shame in that. You keep working your way down. I was fortunate to work for some very big sports teams. That came with a lot of rejections as well from other big teams. But it's not setting your stall out really low and just kind of minimizing your expectations. It's not just what you do on a placement, it's the name of the organization, it's the reference you pick up afterwards, which is really powerful. For me, it's a passion as well. I've been through that process and I've seen the highs, and I could spend a bit of time about that, but I'd rather be open and speak more about the challenges I've had in finding placements in and getting those knockbacks, those rejections. So it comes from a good place, and having these one-to-ones with people. Hopefully you'll know that from the chats we've had. It's not just professional, it's personal, knowing how difficult that is. So for any listener that does want to come and chat to me, there is that empathy, there is that lived experience, and there is that determination to put you in the right place and find something that will, as you say, make your dreams come true, or give you that feeling of satisfaction and happiness, which I've gained as well from that experience, as of you as well, I hope.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you're always organizing talks about placement adjacent things, for example, working on your CV or that job interview or facing rejections, because all of that is a part of this experience. Speaking of experiences, let's go back into some of your favorite ones. You've told me about the non-academic placement. Is there an overseas institutional visit, recency bias or otherwise, that you have on your mind of just something that was just really cool and you knew that this would open up the world or the world view of the person who did it?
Yeah, it's not just the professional side of it. It's not just the fact that somebody maybe got published or they got their name out there. We could speak about all that stuff about your academic profile and how going abroad can really strengthen that. And I can speak from experience being an international PGR myself back in the day. So that's important. But I think just confidence as well. Just even myself, I'll come back to the PGRs in a moment, but I felt a lot more confident after being in Germany, Australia, Ireland, being in different areas. And that's really the thing I love to hear when people come back, not just more confident about the future, but just as people. I know it's only 3 months, but it's tough. We both know this, moving abroad and doing the adult admin, having to navigate a new country by yourself, having to navigate even a new language, different cultural experiences. So it's that as well. I think it's easy to look at the overseas institutional visit and think, great, bit of a holiday and a chance to really boost my profile. But what it can do for you personally, I think for me, growing up in a small little district of Leicester, my mind is so much broader as well for going abroad and going to different places. I think if you said 10 years ago, I'd have lived in so many different countries or had opportunities to have these short-term trips. Yeah, I probably wouldn't have believed that. I feel like I'm a hopefully a better person for it, for the experience. So for anyone that's thinking about going abroad, remember it's not just about your profile and the academic stuff. That will happen. Think about the personal enrichment that comes with that as well.
That's true. We are always so focused on, I mean, I'm saying we because you know this about me, always driven to expand that CV, get more experience, do that work, do as much as possible so that you seem like the best candidate. But the human behind it, there is always growth, right? And these kinds of opportunities further that. And in fact, moving to the UK to start this PhD, oh my goodness, it was hard. Really hard. I had to go from that Indian university to now to De Montfort University, but also moving to London in the middle of that, starting a PhD in the UK. It's changed me. You know, it's changed me. It's changed what I think the world can offer. It's changed what I would want to take back home to people that I know in India as well. And so all of those parts of me, they grow and some of them even solidify. I think you find your identity in the face of a challenge. And I know that's something you love talking about because you're always very real. There are so many challenges.
No, absolutely. I remember when I was doing my master's at Nottingham Trent, I was about to go to Germany for my PhD. And I said to one of the lecturers, I said, am I at a disadvantage going abroad and coming back, trying to get back in the job market or just have an experience in a different country? Will that not apply back home? He just laughed and said, no, it's fantastic. Brilliant. You know, it's a different angle. He just smiled and said, why wouldn't you do that? It's brilliant. And even in that moment, you don't truly believe it still, but years on, it always gets attention. So what I mean is for anyone that does the overseas institutional visit, when you go for those interviews in the future, it'll be a talking point. It's, wow, you were in Canada for 3 months, you're in New Zealand. That's a bit different compared to the average candidate. You know, tell us more about that. And with that does come a network, especially if you're looking for an academic career, those postdocs, those lecturing roles, part of the job description, the advert, they will love it if you have those international connections.
And I do feel like diversity, it broadens the mind, right? Diversity broadens your range of experience, and that can be found at your doorstep if you are, observant and look around. So if you're doing a visit within the UK, an academic visit within the UK, it can absolutely be found here as well. And it can also be found in foreign lands and across waters. And so all of that aside, we've talked about academics and furthering that. Tell me about what you see the placement as doing when we come to non-academic placements. And it's someone's first foray into the job market because it can be a shock of cold water. It can be like a plunge into a cold pool because academics, corporate life, super different from each other. When you speak to people in these one-on-one calls, apart from finding that placement for them, what are you hoping for them?
I don't think there should be too much pressure on going to those non-academic placements. It's just learning if it's for you or not. I don't think the pressure should be to go in there and deliver and have all these results and this impact. And I would say the same for all three of those opportunities. So it's definitely that. It's really just eliminating ideas, I find, with the placement or adding new ideas. If you told me during my PhD I'd be doing this job now, being a placements manager and spending so much time doing side projects on employability, no way. I'm a sports scientist. That's my identity. And I found it very hard to strip myself away from that 10, 5, 10 years ago. I'm completely over that now. But I think other people feel the same way during their PhD. They can feel a bit boxed in. I think, well, I am a historian. I'm a psychologist. There's nothing else I can really do here. Or if I were to transition, there's so much work that goes into it. But like I found, having those short-term experiences, it just opens your eyes and makes you realize, yeah, I can do this. Absolutely, I can do this. That's the more exciting part of it. If I was giving you a more boring element of what comes from this, it's ticking boxes. You look at those non-academic jobs, and it's not to diminish the PhD or take anything from it, but it's a part of the job. It's not everything. Well, you could say the same for academia, but even more so in non-academic settings, there are so many other transferable skills you need, experiences of using certain software, maybe, or things that you need to do a placement in order to get that, basically, is what I mean. There's only so much you can bend a PhD to an academic setting and try and transfer it. It's really about getting that placement. And that's not me being biased because of my job. I think that's a very fair statement that you need to tick it off when it comes to recruitment. It is boring, it's ticking boxes. Have you got a PhD? Have you got non-academic experience? Have you got transferable skills? They don't really move away from that. So to
It's
tick
true,
those
it's true.
boxes, just the way it is, right? With recruitment, it's very rigid, it's very sturdy.
It is.
So yeah, the placement side is, yeah, huge.
I've been through the job market wheel a couple of times, and it's always the same. I think even the way that the job descriptions are broken down now are experience and qualifications and need to have skills and nice to have skills, and they've got that whole list growing, and it seems to just get longer. So it absolutely is a part of being prepared in that way. And as you said, it can offer you the chance to try something and develop those skills. But a conversation we've had a lot is that it might also offer you the opportunity to try something without the risk of not liking it because it's not permanent. You get to try it. And that's what I'm hoping for from a placement when I do it, is to just leap into something that I've never tried before, but I think I might like, but with a complete safety net because it's a placement, it's being funded, and I'm being supported by you and by the team at MGS. And if I don't like it, it's okay. I'm still gonna go back to my PhD, and I won't be making that mistake of trying a job with a full-time contract later on.
I totally agree. I did that quite a lot during my undergraduate degree, for example, where I'll be a fitness coach, I'll be a physio, I'll be a PE teacher, and a few others. And I tried them all, each of them, just even just for a few days. And it's that first impression of no, I don't want to do this. So even beyond the placement itself, even just a day of shadowing, I know it's not a formal placement, it's not anything that would fund, it's just something you go away and do by yourself for a day or two. But even that can give you a good impression of whether it's for you or not. Look broadly, look at the salary, look at the work-life balance, look at the culture. Don't just look at it for the day-to-day work that comes with it. You know, look at everything. You can even do an AI prompt beforehand and say, I'm about to go into this industry. What should I think about before I go into it? And have a huge list of all these different factors. Maybe write it down and do a bit of a reflection and think, do I really want to do this?
You could do either. You could do an AI prompt or you could write an email to Chris. I mean, both of them have a 100% efficacy rate. I'm just saying. Actually, I think Chris
Nice
is a bit
information.
more advanced because you know the person who's
Chat
talking
Chris.
to you.
That's very
ChatGPT.
true. Yeah, I get that.
Why do you think it's important to the MGS that someone does a placement? Because I now know that it's mandatory.
Yeah, we just want to give everyone the best possible chance of being successful. That's why, to be honest with you, I took this job. I was very happy in my last job, and any of my previous employers are listening. Yeah, they have my word there. But I didn't have to leave my job. I was happy. But when I saw this advert for MGS, it was personal to me. I'd benefited from myself getting work experience during my own PhD. I'd seen the difference it had made. The key difference was it was unpaid. And that's not to complain. That just was what it was. But everything I did on top of my PhD was for free, and it's fine. But to see the advert and see that you get paid, you get money, I think, wow, that's unbelievable. You actually get a, whether you call it a salary or just your stipend, it keeps you going during a placement. But that was a huge draw. And just, yeah, seeing how much MGS cares about the PGRs, I know that's easy to say and talk can be cheap, but I've seen it firsthand in 2.5 years how much care goes into it. It's not just let's tick a box for our purposes and say you've done a placement, well done, off you go. It's the care beforehand. It's ensuring that you find something that's right for you, trying to find something that's safe. So to be clear about that, you know, there's a care system before, there's a care system during, and afterwards as well. Mostly from my part, it's ensuring the placement went well. What's next? You know, is this now something you want to develop and move forward with? Okay, how can I help? Was it maybe a bad experience or something you realize you didn't want? Okay, right, let's have a chat and see where you're going next. But no, the bottom line is, and this is not just some corporate thing I've been told to say, this is just from my own opinion. ESRC, MGS, they do really care about the individual in different ways beyond the scope of placements, you know, extra modules and training. But from my corner of the job, yeah, the passion is there to get you to where you want to be after your PhD because it is a tough market, it's competitive.
It is.
I'm not saying that to put people off, but that's what's so good about what I think what we do is we acknowledge that. We don't just say, okay, well, that's your problem. Go and figure it out. We're here to try and cover as many angles as possible. For anyone that's listening to this as a current part of MGS or looking to apply, whilst I'm here, I've got so much time to give and my time is there. You know, it's not just a quick 10 minutes to get all your questions out. We can chat as long as you want, as frequently as you want. The passion's there to help you get what you want from your future.
I know this from personal experience. You have definitely spent a lot of time and energy on my story. And so I'm going to bring this home with two final questions. The first one is if someone feels driven now, motivated to send you an email because they would like some support, what would you like to hear in that email? What do you want to know firsthand from the student?
Passion's the main thing for me. What are you interested in? I suppose it's a now and the future. So what would you like to do now? And how does that link to moving forward? Because some emails I get is, I'm thinking of doing a placement or I have several options. And it's great to hear. But I always want to hear, well, how does that link to the future? You know, and there's not always an answer for that, I suppose. But if you do have some kind of clarity or ideas on the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, that can help me even more, help you source an even more relevant placement. So the big thing is the passion. What do you want to do? What do you want to do now? What do you want to do moving forward? Also, you know, reasonable adjustments, anything that I should consider, things like this, absolutely. Hopefully it goes without saying, but anything related to that would be really useful for me to know as well. Communication style. Some people prefer an email chain. Some people prefer a Teams call. I do campus visits if people are more comfortable having a chat face to face, and that's your preference. So there are lots of different options as well. I'll also add as well, whilst I'm here, I've got plenty of template documents. So if part of the
So
placement
many,
application is
so
sending,
many.
too many maybe, but
Just
I
the
have a
right
lot.
number.
So thank you. If anybody would like a, yeah, well, whatever's relevant, I have template emails that you can send to a placement provider. I even have a backup email template if they don't respond. So what do you say in your second email if you're getting ignored? But yeah, CVs, cover letters, interview prep. I even do mock interviews as well. So if you wanted to have a chat and go through that. Long story short, there's a lot of resources as well, but I don't want to feel like the resources are just me pushing you to go and read them. The main thing is me talking. So whether it's emails, Teams, or face to face, I really am here to chat. And there's no such thing as a silly question either. So even if you come into this with what you feel is the most basic question, don't feel that's a barrier to come and talk to me. Ask me anything you want. I just want to ensure you understand how it works and it's as clear as it can be for you.
And I have to emphasize because Chris is definitely talking about everything that he offers, but he still undersells himself, is that it is a safe space. It is an open space. We've had so many chats, we've had so many conversations. They've spanned basically everything by this moment in time. And I always leave feeling motivated, inspired, and also just heard. And so I cannot emphasize enough that this support is here. And is there any chance you have a middle name that starts with the letter P?
I don't actually know. It's James.
Would have worked so well, chat CPT, you know, but
Ah, yeah.
so close.
Might go to like thought, change my name tomorrow.
Yeah, from Chris Patrick Thompson, shall we?
Yeah, go with that.
And so, my final question for you, Chris, is that is there an organization, a university that you would like to see offer a placement? And it's just, you know, it's on your list of just, I'm gonna put a student there one day.
It's a good question. Selfishly, I'd say Real Madrid, the football team. My goal was always to
Yeah.
work there. As an undergraduate student, the point I made earlier on about aiming for the best, I would have said that because that's what I wanted. So if I could live vicariously through someone else and put them in there, that'd be brilliant.
It
I'm
is a
just going to
tough
say Real
question.
Madrid. I'm sticking with that. I'm going to be selfish.
No, it's a good answer.
I'm going to ruin my narrative of sounding unselfish for most of this. I'm going to finish off selfishly and say the biggest football club in the world because I'm still. Yeah, I wish I worked there, but
You had emailed
yeah,
them, right?
I did. I even learned Spanish. My Spanish must have been horrendous. I didn't get an email back.
Pushing
But
aside.
yeah, I mean that's my final narrative of just, but yeah, just aiming high, and just keep working your way down. It's such a massive thing to take into consideration. Never set your stall really low. Remember who you are as well. These PhDs are so competitive. I've been in a room for the last 3 years where people are getting shortlisted and the bar is so high. So without wishing to sound patronizing or condescending to anyone in MGS, like you're here for a reason. You beat a lot of competition and good competition to be here. And with that means that you are fully deserving of being at the best places in the world. So chase those places.
If you want to bottle that energy and sell it, Chris, you're gonna have a huge waiting list. But until then, everyone, you know where to find Chris. Can you just tell us your email ID very quickly?
Yes, it's chris.j.thompson@warwick.ac.uk.
And Chris also has a podcast series that I 100% everyone needs to listen to. It's got so many more real life tips. Where can we find it and what is it called?
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's called PhD Voice Notes. Spotify, Apple, Amazon. You can find it across lots and lots of different ones. But yeah, PhD Voice Notes. I've got about, at the time of this recording, I've got about 31 episodes. I've got 50 in total to do, so another 19. If anybody has a suggestion for a future episode, and more importantly as well, if anybody wants to do an episode themselves and talk
Nice.
about a certain topic area, I'd like the channel to be more inclusive because really it's just my voice at the moment. So I'd be fully appreciative if anybody would like to give up 3 or 5 minutes, record something, send it over, and talk about something they're passionate about as well.
Thank you so much and have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Ashwari.
Speak soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Midlands Graduate School podcast, PhD Perspectives. The next episode is already up, so go ahead and listen to that one too. It's with Jess Crosby, a PhD student and content creator, and I promise you the episode is full of motivation, inspiration, and Jess just talking about how she's living her dream. I'll see you in the next one.